Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Carl Falconer, him of The View, and yeah, I mean, incredible solo career since, and we talk about both. Carl's great, man. Like, you're in for a proper treat. Completely open book, like real good talker, and I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. Before we get going, just a few thank yous. So thanks to 76 for producing this. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And thanks to you lot for continually supporting, liking, retweeting and sharing and doing all that stuff. Just generally supporting the podcast, so thanks loads. Also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then when you get to the end of today's episode, go and explore the back catalogue, because there's about 350 episodes now, and you can hear me talking to, you know, a huge array of actors, musicians, DJs, producers, as diverse as Motley Crue to Foo Fighters to Maxine Peake through to Suede, Idols, James Acaster, Ed Gamble, oh gosh, Fatboy Slim, Butch Vig. Go have a little rummage, because there's a big bundle of chats, and you can listen to them all for free. Okay, well, also there's a Patreon. If you'd like to get some extra content, then you can support the podcast over there. I put up radio shows there. You can watch all the episodes. I put the videos of all these episodes up on the Patreon, and that's going to cost you 79p a month, which is pretty reasonable, right? Anyway, it gives me great pleasure to say, please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Carl Falconer. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the cacao bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Right, we are recording. Carl, how you doing, man?
I'm good, mate. Good to be here, man.
Good. We've just been chatting before we press record. You're coming off the back of a marathon in Loch Ness, man. That looked great.
Yeah, it was... So I've never officially done a marathon. I've done the distance before, but I think I was going in a bit cocky. So I didn't understand it. So the guys, like, I just went to the front of the queue, no, like to the very front of the start line, and then I looked, and it was all these like maniacs, and I was like, oh no, you're supposed. So there was like 5,000 people behind us. I was like, why are they not coming to the front? It makes sense to go to the front, but that was all the fast people, so everyone's overtaking us in that. So I think you're supposed to go like my marathons I've done before are 3 hours 45 minutes. So I was like, okay, I'll maybe go back a bit, and then. But this one was like full of hills, and it was just, I did not expect it. And it was like, I had to get up at 6:30, and I didn't get any breakfast because you had to get a bus to the place. And if I didn't get there on time, you missed that bus. So the hotel I was in wasn't serving breakfast at that time. So I had two like wee protein balls. But luckily I had a big massive cheeseburger the night before. But it was like, I would have been out, and I was like, no, I need some food, freaking out. And then it was like, but gale force winds and like snow up the mountains of here. I was like, oh, I'm not doing it. I'm not getting off this bus. But I got off and done it, man. It was class. You know, I think about 18, there's a massive hill. Like, just be aware of it. And I saw it. I was like, dun, dun, dun. I was like, oh my God, they're no joking. This is massive. And then there was all these guys, like, they were like, yeah, I've done like 26 marathons and all this. And they were like, yeah, all over the world. And then this guy was like, just vomiting at the side. The guy was telling me, all, he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, you're not finishing this one, buddy. And then even when I'd finished, I was like, driving back over the bridge in like Inverness, and that guy was just finishing. It was about an hour later, but he was just so funny because he was showing off before it. Like, yeah, I've done like so many marathons all over the world. Yeah, it's a spiel lot, man. It's class.
And so, I mean, a lot of people have got into running over the last sort of 16, 17 months. That's obviously been a little bit weird for everyone on the planet. So before we start the place, just to touch on that really, Carl, and ask like how you found lockdown, both personally and creatively.
I sold my house, and because I just finished touring my album, No Thank You album, and I had my second child, so I was away for quite a while. I was all over the world doing that, and then I was like, I'm not really seeing the kids enough. So I had this mad idea. I was like, why don't we sell the house, move over to America? And then like, I'll just be a songwriter. Everyone keeps asking me to write songs, and I'm going to do it. So I'd done that. And then a couple of months into it, we're living in a small apartment in Los Angeles. And a couple of months into it, the locked thingy happened, COVID. So we had to come home because it was like, everyone was going about with guns there, and we were in this wee small apartment. I was like, we need to get out of here. This is raj. So we got back, and then you weren't allowed to view houses, or you weren't allowed to buy houses. It was mayhem. So we came back to Dundee, and there was nothing. So we went on, like, we found a private renter that you didn't have to go inside. So we ended up in Arbroath, which is like, if you're from Dundee, you don't really just go and live in Arbroath. It's quite a strange thing. So we're in this like little fishing village with a family, and I quite enjoyed it. You know what I mean? It was just us. It was just me and my two girls and my missus, and we were just in this cottage. Normally, I'm 24 hours, like nonstop every day of the week. Like, there's something going on. So I think a lot of people are, but to have nothing to do and not worry about like work or anything, it was kind of good. We were going in the woods every day, playing like Scooby Doo games with the kids, and like building, making bow and arrows, and like buying like every paddling pool under the sun, and like just being mad. It was great, and then I was writing a lot as well. So I started chomping at the bit to get work done. And I was like, oh, I need to do something. Like, what if all this lifts and I've just been sitting on my arse not doing anything? So I was like, okay, I've got enough songs here. When I was in Los Angeles, I wrote quite a lot of songs. So I was like, I contacted this guy that I'd met over there. And I was like, can I come over and do an album with you? And he was like, yeah. So I got a bounce back loan. No, like one of these things that everyone was getting. I was like, shit, why not? When in Rome, not making everyone get a bounce back loan. So I got one, and then I spent it on making the record, but I couldn't get over to America. So we were trying every place where you could get into. So it was like the Jamaica. We were going to go to Jamaica because you were allowed into there, and then there was maybe Thailand, and then it was, but we couldn't, both of us, because he was from America and I was from the UK, both of us couldn't get in to certain place. So he came over here and then recorded it in the Libertine studio in Margate.
How was that?
Yeah, it was class. It was good, man. It was just me and him recorded everything. It was just me and a guy, Frankie Siragusa. He plays drums, and like we both play everything. So it was just like, no, like, not sometimes when you're in a studio, there's always like, there's people videoing, there's managers, and there's the band. It's really there's too many cooks kind of spoil the broth, but this time it was like just me and him doing everything. I never had management either at the time. So I was in talks with Alan McGee, who was kind of just took over the View at that time. And he was like, I don't really do pop music. And I was like, because I'd made all these pop songs in lockdown, and I was writing them for other people. So I was going full on pop, you know what I mean? So like, and I've never done that. And I do love pop music. No, I didn't like total pop, but like, I grew up with women, and they love pop music. Like, I love ABBA and everything, and like Michael Jackson, and like I kind of like more sensitive stuff, you know what I mean? Like, but obviously being in the View, you get tired with just fucking drugs and rock and roll and like jail, you know what I mean? It's yeah. Like, that's not me, man, you know what I mean? So I think doing that was great, but I was a wee bit releasing it. I was like, oh no, how is people going to find it? But I don't think people fucking care anymore. People don't actually, at the time I was all like nervous to release it, and I was like, it's just a song, you know what I mean? Before, I think if that was like 2007 to 2015, because you've got the band as well, they'd be like, oh no, there's no way we're releasing that. But it was up to me. I had no management, no label, anything. So I was just like, fuck it. So, but then I ended up getting a record label and publishers and all that. So it kind of took a different direction. But yeah, it was good just to be my own boss. I've always kind of been my own boss, but total boss. Like, right, even in the studio, it was like, even though that Frankie was producing it, it was still like, right, what are we doing here? No, there was nobody else. It's just me. And I was like, okay, let's just start this today and do this song. And it was pretty cool. Because normally if you're with a View, like, they'd be going, oh, I remember one time, like, I was singing this song, How Long, on my fourth album, Cheeky for a Reason. And I remember saying, hello, this dead high bit. And then I hadn't really sung like that before on a record. And I remember the boys going, fuck's sake, Beyonce, calm down. And I was like, fuck yes. It really broke my ego, man. It made me feel shit. And I was like, yeah, boys, I'm fucking just in there like giving it my all, like my heart and soul. You're calling me Beyonce. Well, I'll take that as a compliment. I was like, but do you know what I mean? You never got away with that stuff for the View. But I'm eager to see what would happen if we got together now and tried to do music together, because it's been 6 years. It's been like, what, 7 years since we've done an album or something. So it'll be weird.
Well, let's start the playlist. And for track one, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
I picked this song, Up the Bracket by the Libertines, because I just think it's strange, and I'd rather than pick a big, crazy, like, intellectual interview, I just thought, because it's like, I remember that was when I first kind of got into that kind of music. I was into, like, the Beatles and White Oasis and that, but I remember just thinking I've always thought that the Libertines were like lurching in the mire, just like really decrepit. Like, it was, I just imagine London to be like that when you were in a nightclub and like an indie night or something in Dundee, and that came on, you were just fucking buzzing. It was just like ding ding, and everyone started pogoing. It was brilliant. So yeah,
it's I think one of the things that, like, I've run like an alternative like indie club for 30 years, and I've watched these different kind of sort of scenes happen and come and go, and the Libertines created such a furore when that come out, and it sounded so much like, you know, Oasis. It's tight as hell, it's really structured, but there was something loose and definitely grimy and grubby about the Libertines, as you said. It just everything that they sort of projected just seemed a little bit rough around the edges, and it seemed like you'd see these people in tan. Do you know what I mean? They didn't look like rock stars like Liam and Noel, and do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that was what, when we were in a band, like when the View got together, we were still obsessed with Oasis and stuff, and when the Libertines came around, we started like going, fuck it, like not washing and shit, and like just like that's when the drugs really started. We were like kind of wee sniffing them again, but it was like, whoa, let's get into fucking the Libertines, this is class. And then from the Libertines we got into the Clash and got even more like just this fucking landing, mate. It was like, loved it, man, honestly. Because even when we do tours, I would just throw my shoes away and just have no shoes for it. I went nearly a year without shoes, and it was like, we used to have like competitions to see who could be the grubbiest, you know what I mean? It was like, that all comes from the Libertines. That was like, it was a thing. You know, people did, there was a smell. Nobody had aftershave or none. It was just like, everyone was just stinking. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just in like the noughties, like 2005 to like, I think about 2010, it changed. bands like the Vaccines and that come along, and then it kind of got a bit more clean and like the Slick back here, and then Alex Turner started doing his little baby, good thing, you know what I mean? And then everyone got a bit clean then. And then, yeah, you were kind of like, oh, there's some drugs are not cool, and laptops are in now, and fucking, you know what I mean? It was like, everything's recorded and everyone's technical, and you know what I mean? It was all done by the book. And then I was still like, oh, shit, I'm just kind of getting into this whole rock and roll thing, and the music's coming out of it.
I've got to buy a fucking shower gel now. What's that all about? And you mentioned, like, your love of pop music, and in regards to intros, from looking at when like The View started and the way that people would listen to music then to how people would listen to music now, I watch my kids, and my kids are finding their music via all manner of apps and TikTok and things like that. And do any of them, I mean, and you're seeing with big commercial pop music, you're seeing lots of songs that are literally 2.5 minutes and start with a chorus and it's just hook, 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 hook. Like, do any of them kind of changes in you know, maybe attention spans getting smaller and thumbs moving quicker? Honestly, Carl, I've tried to frame this question right for about 350 episodes and I've never fucking got it right where I'm going with it. But to the way that these new trends in music and things that we're seeing in commercial pop music, you know, the science of it and stuff like that, does any of that filter through when you pick up your guitar and you write a song? Do you know where I'm going with that question?
I think so, yeah. I mean, back in the day, like, well, 2007 to, like, 15 was when we were... When you still didn't, I mean, when we first got on the radio, like, for example, that was like 2006, right? So then they were cutting your songs to get on the radio. So we had massive intros. But then we would go like, fuck it. I mean, even if you look at our second album, it's like 1 hour and 10 minutes it lasts for us. I mean, that's, you don't get that done anymore. That'll be how it wasn't accepted. You know what I mean? And calling it witch bitch, you're not allowed to do that. It's all PC. It's like there's stuff like, I think like nowadays, like, especially, like, since I've kind of got back on the radio recently, this is the first bit of radio play I've had, like, in a long time, because I kind of had to get rid of my reputation and sort of clean up a bit and admit defeat to you, you know what I mean? And then there was all of my songs, I'd thought about keeping them 3 minutes, but some of them go for 4 to 4 minutes, and I had these amazing intros, but even my American producer guy, he was like, dude, you got to fucking cut that. There's no way you're getting that shit through. And it was like, I was like, come on, man, what do you mean? It's a cool intro. He's like, it doesn't matter. And then it goes to the mixer, and he'll cut it down again, and they take everything off it. So even I had this song, and it's like, unless you're Adele, I mean, I've got the song Don't Call Me Baby on my new record, and I was trying to get it as a single. They were like, they're not going to play it because it's too slow. I was like, fucking listen to every old Adele song. They're slow as fuck. Wes Capaldi's all slow. It's like, they're like, yeah, but unless you're them and you're on a pure humongous major label, nobody's got time to listen. So you've got a chance. You've got to go bang, 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 fucking get it out right away. Do you know what I mean? So it is shit. I mean, but it's kind of the way. But I've never thought about it like that, obviously, because people have not got the attention span. Do you know what I mean? They're just like, fuck, mate, that intro's too long. You know what I mean? Get it off. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get a chance. But yeah, but now and again, there comes along a song like fucking Arcade Fire or somewhere here. They're so cool that you've got that they make it cool to listen to the intro. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, Arcade Fire. It's like, oh, there's like 15 million of them. It must be cool. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you for track two, mate, to tell me the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
I was quite an emotional wee boy anyway, but I think I remember I went through a phase of, I was obsessed with Michael Jackson, and I remember listening to Man in the Mirror, and I used to snap pencils and like I used to show people Man in the Mirror and then go, do you feel it? And they'd be like, what the fuck are you on about? I was like 6 or 7 and I'd go, I'm so emotional, I'm snapping a pencil. Where do I find the strength to do that? It's because Michael's giving me the strength. It's weird. Oh, we've got to like just look at ourselves in the mirror. I didn't have a clue what he was on about, but I knew it was emotional. Do you know what I mean? I never knew what he was actually talking about as a kid. It was only until I got older, but I was like, but just what he was saying, it just sounded emotional. It's like, but I remember thinking, that's my hair, I want you to know. It's like, oh, just class, man. Still love it, man. It's amazing.
It's, whatever people's perceptions are on, you know, whatever Michael Jackson's done, anything aside as an artist, And also, as a vocalist, it's fucking off the scow, his voice, isn't it? And it's...
Yeah, man.
And it's that... Do you know what? It's when I hear Can You Feel It by the Jacksons, and you've got all the Jacksons that have all got really good voices, and I don't think Michael comes in till, like, the third chorus.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, people love the world. And it's like, oh, man. And it just goes to a different level, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, oh, yeah, there classic. You go. There's the fucking star. It's like.
And they're, yeah. they're all sitting raging, like, oh, it's my little brother again.
You know it. Oh, dear. So if you had to sort of pinpoint what that emotion was, what do you think it was?
I think it was inspired. I think it was inspiration, like. But I was like, because I remember thinking that's what he wants you to know, but still not really knowing what he was on about. But you kind of do get it as a kid, do you know what I mean? Because I used to watch the video.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So the Moonwalker video, know where it was like all his stuff in the one on and had to be filmed in the middle. But I think it was definitely inspiration. I still get that to this day. Like, I've got this thing where I bite my finger when I'm fucking, it's either when I'm really angry or I'm real excited, and I've got a fucking outlet. It's like my ADHD. It's like fucking mad, and I just like, it's just that. If I never snapped a pencil, I probably would have put my head through a window. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, like,
fucking.
And so, where was that? Where was you listening to that? Where was growing up?
At Dundee. I think I used to always. I remember getting the history album on tape. I went to South Africa because my family's from there, and I got it on tape. And when I was, so I was seven when I went there, and that would have been 1994, maybe 1994, 1995, when the history album came out. And I went to South Africa, and I remember listening to it on the plane, like, and just being blown away by all these songs, because I knew Michael Jackson. I had like Thriller and stuff on VHS taped, but I never knew like all these songs. It was fucking mental. No, like all the like Tabloid Junkie and all them stuff that's on the second and the song History, all these stuff. And I started getting really into it. I think that was what got me into music and singing. Like Michael Jackson was the first thing I was obsessed. That was all I cared for. And then I loved. I think after that it was Eminem. I was like Michael Jackson for like 5 years, like nothing else. And then Eminem, and then I started writing like raps and like rhymes, and then started smoking weed, and then I got into the Beatles. But I remember thinking the Beatles were really old, like thinking, oh, listen to that old shit, like, yeah. Fucking. And then like when I was about 11, I kind of started getting it, and then 12, I went, fuck, I need to get a guitar. And then the 13, I was writing on songs, and I knew every single. I used to have like all the Paul McCartney is dead clues on the wall, and then I had every album cover like repeated, like just used to print them off at school. And it was just like, so I felt like that if I wasn't looking at anything Beatles related, then I was wasting my time. You know what I mean? That's how obsessed I was. I was like, fucking, I'd put super glue on my fingers at night and just touch my guitar until I went to sleep. And then I just freaked myself out by listening to Revolution Number 9 on repeat. It's like, I don't know. I was a weird kid, man. Honestly, like, it was like, nothing's changed, like, but I don't know. But I remember just thinking, like, thinking in this like this wee bubble, and I felt like, because everyone was into Stone Roses and Oasis still, and I'd kind of, I loved Oasis, but I wasn't at this time, I wasn't, it took me another wee while to really obsess over them. But then the Beatles, I felt like they were nines personally, and everyone else was and Stone Roses, and because all my mates were, all the View Boys were a year older than me, so I kind of went about with all my friends were a year older. And they were all like, I started playing the guitar, and they were like, oh, he's playing the Stone Roses. I was like, fuck the Roses. We used to call them the Roses, Ken. Oh, the Roses, fuck the Roses. And then all of a sudden people were like, what's that Beatles song you were playing? And then everyone was begging me to show them how to play them. I was like, oh, you're coming crawling now. Yeah, this is my information, my Beatles. It's like, but honestly, that's what I felt like. I felt like they were totally nine. So it was so weird.
Well, standing the formative years for track three, I'm going to ask you to tell me, I don't know if you can remember what you sent over, if not, give us a nudge. The song that reminds you of your time at school.
Yeah, I'll give you a nudge.
You've just mentioned him, actually. Eminem, my name is.
Eminem, oh yeah. I think that was when I remember, it reminds me of school, because that's when my kind of memory started when, because I think in first year, I think it's different in England, but when we go to first year, it's like after Premier 7. So I remember I was kind of into Michael Jackson. I liked musicals like Grease and like fucking Jesus Christ Superstar, West Side Story. I was into like stuff like that. Like, kind of wasn't like a, I was quite a rough kid, you know what I mean? But I just liked musicals and stuff. Like, when I got to secondary, I discovered Eminem. And I was fucking blown out. I was into South Park and stuff like Eminem, and I'm South Park's my favourite thing in the entire world. That's, I'm obsessed. But when I discovered Eminem, I was just reading the lyrics, and because obviously I'd only heard the thing on the box and on like MTV, and you'd get the one about the swearing, and I got the real one. I was like, fuck, who's this Marilyn Manson he's talking about and all this? And I started like going in a big hole, and it just reminds me, that was another thing. I'd come into school, and me and my mate McPhail, who'd done like all the Views artwork and on the covers and that, I got him into it and stuff as well, but we used to sit and read the lyrics, and it just reminded me of school. I felt like we were kind of hard one up on the teachers, because we were like listening to it in our ears and just going about, yeah, fucking on about fucking bitches and hoes, and it was mental. Then we got into like 2001, like Dr. Dre, and I was like, oh my god, like fucking bitches and hoes. I was like, what is this? And my mum would go mental, I'd be blaring it, and I'd go, mum, it's music. I used to say to my mum, it's for a project in school, we've got to listen to it. And she'd go, are you sure? And I'd get my sister to, my sister would go, yeah, that's the joke. And she'd go, that's fine if you listen to it. And she'd go, but you can't, that's no right, what he's saying. I was going, nah, it's just fun. That was fucking insane. But I think that was about a year or two. And then I was into Tupac and Biggie Smalls and all that. But then when you were into that, it was like everyone was kind of thought that everyone's smoking weed and that. And I thought, I've never really liked going about and, you know, in big groups and that, and I was like, but what we kind of did, we'd go to this old like sort of abandoned school that we used to play football in, like after school, and everyone just going about listening to this fucking rap music, and like just some of the chat was just, you know, it was bad, and there was still like, there was just people started getting out of drugs, and that was that. I was like, oh, that's pretty, that's, I'm not sure if I'm ready for this shit, you know what I mean? Like people, yeah. 12 and 13 year olds taking ecstasy, and like, I was like, fuck, and just while we're playing football, like double drop in ecstasy, I'm like, fucking, I was like, shit, I'm out with this rap game. I'm like, I was like, fuck, I'm just going to stick with the Beatles. So then, yeah, I think what happened was, I remember we used to be in gangs and stuff when we were kids as well. So I remember like getting chased down, we used to chase each other back and forward. And one time I got caught, and because nobody would ever get caught, it was just like you chase each other and go, the Charleston are in a, and then driver or the Whitfield are coming in. You chase each other. But one time, the guy I was chasing, I used to be the youngest and the smallest, and I was like, I thought I was a wee hard nut. And I was chasing this guy down the street. And one time he just stopped in his tracks and like, as if to say, well, why am I running for this wee dick? And I was like, no. Just grabbed us and fucking, he had a baseball bat, took us out, done us in, and then everyone started filling us in. And my mate Rennie, who plays keys for The View now, he was from Charleston. He was like, oh, that's Ronnie Faulkner's wee brother. Get off him, fucking all this. And then I couldn't go back to my mum's because I had my face was a mess. So I said I was doing a school project again and stayed at my mate's, like a couple of streets away, Jimmy Harris. And his mum was like, oh, we'll put some makeup on you and we'll just make sure you didn't go out for a couple of days. And then my mum came back, had a hat on, and she was like, let's see you, what's happened? And she was like, the fuck? She's freaking out. And I'm like covered. And she was like, right. So she got us a guitar, and my brother-in-law got us an electric guitar and an amp. And I just basically stayed in after that, became a recluse. And then that was kind of how I got good at my trade. So I'm blessed to have been battered that day from that guy. I remember his name. It was Frankie Melvin. This guy is fucking... I remember it. It was scary times, but yeah, that was good. When I felt like it helped my path in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Even if it's sore.
Yeah, even if it involves a baseball bat. And so, just sort of, you know, aside from getting, you know, crack with a bat, like, did you enjoy school?
I loved school. I loved the whole primary. I loved the whole secondary. Yeah, because I think I loved school because we kind of had the wee group of guys that used to go, but we're like, everyone was obsessed with music. We were all in this kind of wee thing. And there was the guys that played football. Kind of, we all played football as well. I loved it. I played for like Dundee Schoolboys when I was 11 and stuff. So I was kind of into it. But once I got into music, I stopped it. And then we were into snooker for a bit. That was a big thing. Like, everyone used to go to snooker. But I think just every day I used to get excited to go to school because at breaks we'd go into the room, we'd all grab a guitar and we'd just have a jam. We had this guy, Mr. Bell, who was like the maths teacher, and he'd just bring all his guitars in and we got to play. And then at lunchtime we'd walk and we'd just argue about the Beatles and Stone Roses and just about Oasis, and then just eat our chips and macaroni or whatever and just chat about music the whole day. And I enjoyed it, man. And then I got pretty good grades, you know what I mean? I wasn't that bad at school. Like, I was just a bit preoccupied, you know what I mean? I was always like writing songs and like doing something. I remember this guy in my class, he was Martin Navarro. He's like one of my mates from back in the day. He's a boxer now, but he used to listen to my songs. But one day I brought my tape in to show the music teacher. It was like a tape, I'd recorded it from a 4-track, and I had these songs. They were pretty cheesy, but then I was thinking, these are really cool. And I didn't want anybody to hear, but in the Spanish class, he grabbed it in my bag and played it as if to try and embarrass us. And then it was like, and all the girls were like, oh my God, that's so cute. And I was like, oh yes, I'm in there. I mean, I was like embarrassed, like, no, I don't want you to play it and all this. Then they played it and they're like, that is so cool. And then it kind of became a thing. Everyone was like, then people started copying the tape, and then it was getting like shown around school and people were like, oh, have you heard this stuff? And then so it was kind of, he helped me out as well. Do you know what I mean? Even though he was trying to sort of pick on us, but yeah. I helped. I was like, yes. So, no, I love school, man. It was never a dull day. And like, I didn't know, like, I wasn't like, I mean, everyone skived school and that, but yeah, I was good. I think I left to go to college when I was 16, to go to music college, but I was in Perth Music College for like a month or 6 weeks, and then we got a record deal. Like, the View Boys got a record deal, so I just left. But yeah, that was cool, man, yeah.
So was there ever any kind of question, like, at school as to what you wanted to do when you left? Was music, like, it had to be music? And also, if the answer's yes to that, did it seem possible that lads from Dundee could get record deals? And, you know, was that something that you thought was completely possible?
No, I know at the time. We didn't really know, like, because we were in a cover band, but we used to do the talent show of the year, and then we started playing. We were called Lost Weekend, and we were called Surreal. Like, Pete, the guitarist, his dad was like, used to drive about. And he used to like, because I was the only one with a mic, because nobody would sing at that time. We had a different drummer called Ryan Brown, but nobody was singing it. He'd go, right, this is your moment, right? After the show, he'd go, he'd make me say, yous have been great, we've been surreal. And I would go, no, fuck you, get your son to say it. And his son would go, and Pete would go, no, you say it, you're the main man. And I'd go, no, it's fucking, it's embarrassing, man. And he'd go, right, okay, yous have been great, we've been surreal, well, thank you very much. And then we were called the Kyle and the Casuals, and we were called the Lost Weekend. And then for a bit, we stopped playing. And then it was my dad's funeral when I was 16, and then I hadn't seen the boys in ages because they were a year older than me. I was still at school, but they had went and got trades. So Pete was a joiner and Kieran was a civil engineer, and they'd went and got trades, and then we came back and I was like, oh, we've not played in ages. They went, let's get back together. I was like, I've got loads of songs, and Kieran was like, I've got loads of songs too. So we came in and then we rehearsed, and then we'd done like Coming Down, Claudia, Streetlights and Superstar Tradesman, and then we were like, fuck, these are good. These are actually good. We could do it. And then we were like, let's give up our jobs and go full time. And because we had this pub called the Bayview that my cousin ran. So he was like, you could have that down the stairs. So that's where we got the name The View from. And then we started thinking, we're good. And then that was where we started getting a bit cocky and the drink started happening. And like drugs were happening and it became a scene and everyone was coming to see. We had busloads of people. So then it started like, we're like, shit. And then we got some guy came to see with Grant Dixon. He's like, I go on to managers and gave her like £10 each, and we'll be able to like get actual drinks rather than scrounging. I was like, oh my God. So it happened pretty fast, you know what I mean? But the biggest thing to ever come out of Dundee, we had the associates, Billy McKenzie, then we had Danny Wilson, who had like number one with Mary's Prayer. But even that seemed like fucking, you're never going to get there. But then Grant Dixon, our manager, was like, if there was someone who wanted to sign to, who would it be? Like, this, we'd only been together for like, eight, 9 months, kind of doing our own material. We all had like 9 songs. You know, like probably James Endicott from Rough Trade. And he was like, well, he wants you to come down to London. And I was like, what the fuck? And it happened like that. And then we just came down and then we got signed and it was pretty quick, you know what I mean? But even then it was like, we kind of took it in our stride after that, like getting number one and like getting signed. We never even knew we were on a major label. I mean, we were on Columbia, Sony. But we thought we were on like a wee indie because we were that stupid, yeah. Do you know what I mean? We were fucking 18. And it was just, we're just going about our head in the clouds the whole time. As long as we were just getting pumped full of money and just fucking drugs and bevy. It was great. It was a great time, Matt. Do you know what I mean? It was like, there was no PC shit back then as well. So yeah. You could do what you want. You know what I mean? You could do whatever you wanted. There was nothing. I mean, I got arrested for drugs and that. But like, I mean, you can't do anything. But you got away with no having a good time in a party without like having to watch what you do or watch what you say. So
yeah.
It was good times, man. But you didn't. I think to your question before, I think I wanted to be a load of stuff. But I think once I started writing songs, I wanted to do it because I remember I used to go and when I had my big PC in my room, I used to go online and go find out all the names of the labels and the addresses. I used to write letters to them, send them tapes, send them all like demos and stuff. So I was always at it. You know what I mean? I'm still like that. I've never sat on my arse once, even like when. Even when I was in LA, I was thinking that was my chill time, but I was like, no, I need to get another album. I need to do another album. I'm constantly working it. I've been like that since I was a kid.
Where do you think that drive comes from, Carl?
I don't know. I think it's maybe something to do with severe ADHD, like fucking, and just like, it's been like that since I could remember, but I think it's, I'm just never settled. Do you know what I mean? I'm never happy. And I always think, even once something's produced, and I finished it, I still think, shit, I could have bettered that. Do you know what I mean? And I think sometimes it's good to be like that because it gives you a drive. It's good. But other times, I mean, I've got to put my earphones in at night to get to sleep because I'm just constantly writing. So I'll be like, fuck, I know my piano's just sitting there. I'll be like, oh, come on. And I start thinking I'm an arsehole if I don't get up and do it because it might be my next hit. That's what goes through my head. So I've got to put South Park on and just like shut off.
Yeah,
and like, just, hey, you guys, hey, you guys. Oh, that's better. Oh, no songs, yes. And she's like, play the fucking volume down. I'm fed up a Cartman's voice every night before I go to bed. And I'm like, oh, you don't understand. I need it. So like, I'm constantly just doing it. And like, my manager, Al McGee, he's always like, Kyle, right, you told me to do this like 2 days ago. I'm on it. It's like, stop bugging me. I'm like, I just need to know you're doing it, but just checking. It's cool. It's like, and it, like, I think when we first started working together, so we've had that, I think The View have had 27 managers or something. Like, we've like, it's fucking crazy. Like, but he was like, well, why is that? And I was like, I'm not sure. But I think like,
I reckon some of it's got to be down to the fact that you sounds like you boys didn't wash for 5 fucking years.
Yeah, maybe, man. I think it was just me. They'll be like, fuck you, I washed. Yeah, it's just me, man.
And sort of, well, I'll tell you what, let's get the next track out. The next track that I want to ask you is the first song you remember buying from a record store. Can you remember what you sent over?
Yeah, it was TLC, No Scrubs.
That's a tune, right?
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant. I love TLC, man. It was just, I'd been given Michael Jackson, as I say, and then I'd been given other stuff. Like, I remember getting the Spice Girls album and stuff. Like, but I remember that was the first thing I went and bought with my pocket money. But yeah, I just fucking loved it. I just thought it sounded really fresh and cool. Like, it still to this day, that song stands the test of time. And funnily enough, like, I've been working with this guy, one of my good friends. His name's Risey, Ryan Mackay. He lives up in Aberdeen, and he's like a dance producer. So I've been like, a lot of the time I'll reference TLC. I'll be like, but even though like we'll be making like a sort of TLC sounding song, at the time we're doing that, but by the end it sounds like a sort of indie track, you know what I mean? But at the time I'm like, it needs to sound like this, and then the more you put on it, it gets less TLC. But I'm always like, oh, let's make it like that TLC song or that TLC song. So yeah, man.
And what's your relationship been like with the record shops, like, over the years, and more recently, you know, seeing the campaign for the recent release, like, you know, of independent record stores been something that you've learned to really embrace?
I mean, when I was younger, I definitely gave like every penny I had to them, you know what I mean? When I was touring for all the time and never got a break, I never really done that. But then I think in about 2011 or 12, I remember Mark Ronson bought me like every Oasis album, and then all the Stone Roses like singles, and like all these collectors things. And I remember thinking, fuck, these are mega. And then I started collecting vinyl after that, so I've got like shit tons of vinyl now. But I think even like making sure that these people survive, like these record shops, because the one that we've got in Groucho's just closed. Groucho's in Dundee, that's just closed down, and that's been like, there's a guy called Breeks. He just died recently. God rest his soul. But he was like the chat of the town. You know what I mean? Everyone was like fucking. I mean, you'd go in there, you got lost for ages. You know what I mean? And even sometimes you'd go in and like come out with some mad metal album. You know what I mean? I liked kind of Iron Maiden a wee bit when I was younger. I like a wee bit of Metallica, kind of Slayer and stuff like that. In school, we kind of dabbled in that, but no much. I kind of got fed up of lead guitar and just focused on just writing songs. But I think, you'd start off as a fucking indie kid or whatever, and come out with a fucking Slayer. You know what I mean? Like, raining bloods, mental, like some of the stuff. You're like, and I remember just thinking, is this okay to listen to this? Oh, well, it must be. It's in the record shop, you know. Yeah. But yeah, it's class, man. I always try and do like play the independent shops and stuff. I just travelled to Leeds, and then I went to one in Manchester. I mean, all that way, and it was like, maybe about 30 people in the shop, but it was worth it. You know what I mean? I was fucking, yeah. I mean, the guy, that I ended up selling like 100 vinyl in one of the shops. Like, just even though there was 30 people there, they were ordering them for the friends, and then he had bought more in and stuff. So they help you more than these HMVs. I mean, there was a few times I tried to, I mean, the funny thing is, when the View get back together, HMV will be like, oh, could you please come and play our shop? And I'll be like, you could fuck right off, because I've tried to get to HMV on my last two albums, and they're like, we don't think you're going to attract enough people. I was like, see the fucking Nick of the Cube, and I played Aside. There was like fucking 300 people there. You know what I mean? I was like, so what? How many people are you expecting in your shop? It only fits 40 or something. But like, and then they'll be asking for the View to do it, and I'll be going, you could fuck off. You know what I mean? Like, these big places, they don't give a shit. I mean, every single album since the View I've ever released, and my Mark Ronson stuff as well, I've always came to the Scottish HMVs and always been really nice to them, and like, treated them fucking brilliant. And like, no, because it's my solo album and it's not on a big label or that. They're like, no, you can't do it in the shop. So I was like, no, fuck it, I'll be sticking to the...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Independence, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I also want to ask you, you're saying about like how driven you are, and also like to be all of this stuff happening so young as well. Was you a confident kid?
Yeah, I was super confident. Yeah, I've always been I was quite shy. I mean, it was funnily enough, right? I was shy, but I was still confident. No, like if it was sports or music or going up and singing or like anything, I would just go and do it. You know what I mean? But sometimes I was kind of a wee bit nervous. I mean, still, I think when I was 16 after my dad died, I developed this thing. It's mad because people used to think it was funny, but it was a massive issue. But you still get, I developed a nervous laugh. And it was like whenever I couldn't order food or I couldn't, if I was going at the snooker hall, I couldn't go in and just say, oh, could I get a game of snooker? Because I just burst out laughing. Anybody. And it was like, if anybody asked me for the time in the street, I'd burst out laughing. It was like a nervous disposition thing. And then it kind of developed and I stopped it once I started drinking. And then I was like, oh, it's fixed. And then, so I've always tried to, I started touring and stuff. I think after a couple of years of sort of hitting the bevy and whatever for like hard, I started, obviously it was related to that, but I didn't know at the time, but I started like getting this vomiting before I went on stage, or even if we pulled up to the venue, or if the venue was even mentioned, or it was like, oh, you're on in an hour, I'd go, right? It was fucking crazy. So I was just wretch all the time. And the band got used to it. They were just like, oh, I just have a bucket on stage, or have a bucket at the side. And I never thought it was the alcohol. I was like, what? I wonder what that is. And then I tried every tablet under the sun. And then one time I was at a party, I was like on acid and I fell and got a knife through my foot from a dishwasher. It went right in between my foot. And then I had to wait a couple of days in the hospital. But then they gave us like Tramadol for the pain. And then I remember thinking, taking Tramadol and thinking, fucking hell, this is, I stopped boking. I stopped going, ugh. I was like, oh, found my niche. This is it. I've got it. So I started fucking taking that like every day, like copious amounts. But thinking this is great, and then like waking up and like pills of vomit, but I wouldn't vomit during the day, and I was like, shit. So I was on that for a couple of years. I was like, shit, what? So I've always kind of thought there's a problem, but it was just bevying too much, man, on tours, and that was a vicious circle. So I'd be like, even if I was taking it easy, I remember being at Reading, but we were playing the night before. I thought, oh, if you drink, I'll take it easy. Next day I woke up and I was just like, the whole day, like, ugh! So you used to have to take this like tablet, Stematol, that would stop us doing it. And I was still doing it, and be blood coming up, and just the whole time ruining my throat. And then, kind of, what a shame on the band, because they had to put up with that shit. They were like, well, if you didn't go out last night, you'd be fine. But you did. But I think because when we were younger, we were used to just recovering really quick from a night out.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And then when I'd go on like a week bender, I'd be drinking for 2 weeks on the tour bus. Every night was a party, you know, every single night till like 6 in the morning. They'd go to bed, wake up at about 4, like not do a sim check, just get the crew to do a sim check. Go on stage, you'd have a couple of vodkas, a couple of beers, and you were just leveled out again. A couple of bokes, and you were back to normal. And it was just a vicious cycle. So I think like now I've kind of realised what the problems were, but just you can't fix it with a bevy, and if you do too much bevy, it doesn't help. So it's just controlling it. You know what I mean? Like, but I was so confused. I never even thought for a second it could be the alcohol or the drugs or anything. I thought it's definitely a nervous thing, but that was creating the nervous thing and giving me anxiety. You know what I mean? Because I was thinking I'd wake up and go, I need a drink so that I don't vomit. Because if I start thinking, I'm going to start vomiting. So I'd have to have a drink when I woke up. And it wasn't because I was shaking, I needed a drink. I was just thinking, if I don't have a drink, I'm going to vomit. That was like, it was horrible times, man. But I've got it sorted, man. I wouldn't have, in the dream of doing that shit anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I've done a few quite extensive tours, and I've been all right. No boking anyway. Maybe a boke and a half now and again, but like, it's all right. Yeah.
So I mean, we've mentioned about, you know, obviously getting cracked with a bat and how that kind of changed the course of your career and life, and with that kind of mindset, everything happens for a reason. If you could go back now, would you change anything that you just mentioned?
Would I change anything?
Yeah. Like, in regards to, like, the kind of the touring behaviour and, you know, deciding that Tramadol's exactly how you should be dealing with the booze. I just did Tramadol instead. Copious amounts. I mean, obviously, you know, the view, you know, from my perspective, when I'd pick up the NME or the Melody Maker or whatever, you know, it was... You were the rock and roll boys. You were this raucous touring band that, you know, that were party boys. You were young lads, like, having the time of your lives. Like, that was how I perceived it. And obviously, you've just sort of you know, shed a little bit more light on what was going on with yourself and maybe what some of the boys had to kind of, you know, understand about your behaviour. Like, would you change anything now if you could? Or do you think it all happens for a reason?
I mean, it probably does all happen for a reason, but if I was able to... Do you know what? It's mad because I always say, like, I kind of... Whenever I meet my old tour managers or my old managers, or that, I go, why the fuck did you let us do that? He's like, are you joking? I'm trying to tell you. He said, you would fucking go mental. He's like, you were always saying you're in charge and all this shit. And I was like, well, you should have slapped us. I was like, but I'm not sure if I would... Nah, I probably wouldn't change stuff because if I changed anything, I wouldn't have my kids. I've got another kid on the way. I'm going to have three kids in the next few weeks. So, like, I wouldn't change stuff because I wouldn't have had my kids. But I think even now, like, when I'm chatting to the view and that, if we were to get back, it's like, we've all said, yeah, but it can't be like that way. And it's like, oh, no, oh, no. It's like, a wee bit. And they're like, oh, well, maybe. But no, like, yeah, we'll need to watch what we drink before we go on stage. And none of that. And he wouldn't be getting backstage and knowing none of that. And, yeah, we've already kind of set some rules if it ever happened. But it's, but we're kids, man. You give people loads of money in a fucking tour bus and send them all over the world. It's
what,
like,
do you expect?
Fuck, yeah, it's fucking... nobody prepares you for that, ever, know what I mean? And you think you're the dog's bollocks, know what I mean? Because you are the dog's bollocks. So it's like, fucking... It was good times, man. But, yeah, there's some times when I've been carted off the stage sleeping and it fucking... And no turned up for shows and just... I remember one night I was out partying with this girl and I thought, oh, fucking on the ecstasy that we're all night, and I was just like, oh, what a night. And I was like, she was like, you're meant to be playing tomorrow, it was like this festival, and I was like, oh, I'll be fine. And then the next day I was like, thinking, oh shit, I've got a gig. I was like, fucking, I'm trying to phone people. Everyone's like, where the fuck would I be phoning you? I'm like, you're on the stage in 20 minutes. I'm like, I'll be soon. And then I turn up, and then I remember I fainted on stage. Wait a minute, darling. Daddy's just on the phone. Oh, is that me? Cool. Oh, cool. Go and show mum. And I was on stage, and I remember I fainted. And I remember getting, like, pulled off the stage. And it was like, oh, I'm telling you what's wrong. Someone's really came on. And then the guy was like, you were partying. The promoter was like, you were partying until 6 a.m. with my daughter last night, giving her drugs. I was like, I was like, totally caught. I was like, okay, I admit it. It was me. I was partying all night. I was like, oh, something's happened, guys. My heart's not feeling right. He's like, yeah, she went out all night. Yeah, his daughter was older than me. And I was like, she was giving me the drugs. And he's like, no, sure. She was like, no. So that was, I got caught red-handed, like, trying to lie about, like, not feeling well, but...
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, I guess at this point, nightclubs can present themselves. So for track five, I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Well, I've never really been clubbing. I went to a couple of indie nights when I was younger, but...
That's the thing. People always think that... It has to be some kind of sort of rave experience. It can be the local indie night. If you've got a song that reminds you of them early years of indie nights, then by all means.
It would probably be Libertines again, like Don't Look Back Into the Sun. That was the total indie night song. When that song, I remember first hearing that song on Virgin Radio in my art class, thinking, who the fuck is this, man? Oh my God, this is outstanding. Like, really class. You know what? Proper pulled the heartstrings. I was like, oh, and then you see them, like, what they look like and everything. Just like, that just reminds me of a good time. There's a place in, right, when you go and see your mum, please. Daddy's just doing this. What a... Go and see... Sorry.
That's all right, man.
There was a place called the Reading Rooms in Dundee, which we used to always go to. It was like, just when that song came on, just the toms, the boom, 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 boom. It just reminds me of like just field nights, just not remembering how I'm getting home. And just, I think that was the first just consequence-free environment, you know what I mean? Like just being sort of 17 and just starting to get in the clubs and stuff. It was superb times. Like, I remember doing a lot of mushrooms as well, like at that time, like just feeling like loosey-goosey. Just feeling like, yeah, it's like, looking amazing, man. It's class.
Nice. Right, well, for track six, I'm going to take you home and I'm going to ask you to tell me a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
I mentioned them earlier on, but Danny Wilson... a guy called Gary Clark and Kit Clark, two brothers actually, but Gary Clark writes the songs, and he's do you know the song? If I said, save me, what I wouldn't give to be when I was Mary's prayer. It's like fucking brilliant. I remember first hearing that on the radio. My sister went, you know, they're from Dundee, yeah? And I went, oh my God. I was like, what? Because we never really heard it. We always felt like it was only Glasgow and Edinburgh that got famous people. And then she was like, whoa. And it's like, yeah. And I was like, we live in America now. You write songs for Natalie Imbruglia and Britney Spears. And I was like, cool. And I remember thinking like, oh, cool. It could be done. You know what I mean? So like, but I've met him. I've actually wrote songs on before and stuff. He's a cool guy. But even that angle was number one for like 7 weeks. That still comes on Radio 2 every day. So
that's still single, man.
Yeah, it's class, man. Yeah, I fucking love it.
And so was The Associates something that, I guess, you know, being the age you are, did you sort of, obviously you missed The Associates
I missed The Associates, but Billy McKenzie actually managed my manager's band for a bit, I think. My manager was in a band called Yellow Car, and Billy McKenzie was managing him. I think so, but he says some mad stories. I don't know. I might have just made that up, but I'm sure that's
what was
true.
The band called?
A Yellow Car.
Right.
A Yellow Car. They're from Dundee. They got a big like publishing deal in the back in the day, but they went on tour with Green Day and stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Billy McKenzie managed them, I think, yeah. But yeah, I mean, they were still to this day, if you're being from Dundee, if you're ever in London or that, people are like, where are you from? I'm like, Dundee. They go, oh, Billy McKenzie. Oh, The Associates. You go, The View. You go, fuck you.
What a fucking voice he had though, man.
He's fucking legend, man. Absolute legend.
Okay, right. Last track. This is when you can be a tastemaker, mate, and turn someone onto something new. It's a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
It's people that know me, people that I know that follow my band or my music, probably know that I'm obsessed with this band. But I thought for people that are listening to your podcast and that they should listen. There's a band called Sound of Guns that toured with us extensively back in the day, and from about 2010 to 2013 or something, a guy called Andy Metcalf, his daughter's actually in the Mysterines. She's the Leif, she's in the Mysterines, but he kind of co-writes a lot of the stuff with her, I think. But the song's called Collisions, and I remember seeing this band in Putney Bridge in a pub. Was it the Half Moon or something in Putney?
Yeah, Half Moon Putney.
And I remember seeing them and going, who the fuck is this? They looked so cool, and they were like, they sound like fucking sort of U2, but more, they're kind of the Libertines / U2, but I like the Walkmen or something. Like, voice is incredible. Like, I just, the lyrics in that just blew me away. I was like, it's just different. They're not trying to be anybody else. I thought, like, just, I remember just being absolutely fucking blown away. I still am to this day. He still calls me, like, Andy, now and again, just like fucking, like, off his trolley, like, oh, how's it going, kids, from Liverpool? He's like, fucking can't wait to see, you know, thinking about running that marathon. I go, fucking hell, you kind of got off that couch, mate. You know what I mean? But honestly, they really inspired me, Song Collisions. It's great. And I remember, like, coming, I think when we were touring with them in The View and stuff, people started just coming to see them rather than us. It was like, they were fucking, they got a really big following here. They started, like, selling out, like, big venues in Scotland. But they've split up, but hopefully they get back together because, fucking, it's super, super times, man.
Yeah. Well, as sort of 2021's, you know, we're getting into the latter part of it, and hopefully it's going to be a far more open, connected, and joyous place than how the year started. With that in mind, mate, what are you looking forward to from the rest of this year, and what are you going to be doing professionally for the rest of this year?
I've got another marathon to do in a couple of weeks in Liverpool. Then I'm having a kid in a few weeks. And then I've got a wee tour. I'm playing Glasgow, St. Luke's. I'm playing Leeds, Sprindale Social Club. I'm playing London, Oslo, and Manchester Night and Day. So I'm doing that tour in December. And then hopefully we'll try and get maybe a surprise Christmas show someplace. And next year I'll be doing a tour again. A lot of festivals. But yeah, and just I've got like a shit ton of music demoed up, so I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I'm just kind of deciding what path to take. Yeah, man.
And if people want to keep up to speed with everything you're doing, where's the best place to do that, mate?
My Instagram, Kyle Francis Falk, and my Twitter is Kyle Francis Falk as well.
Wicked. Well, if it's right with you, I'll tag you in it when we put this out, so people can find it nice and easily. Kyle, man, It's been a blast. I've really enjoyed chatting to you, man.
You too, man. Spot on.
Oh, man. Thanks loads, mate.
Legend. See you soon.
There you go. What an absolute gent. That was great. Like, bundles of energy. Absolutely transparent, like, honesty. Love that, you know. It's lovely to kind of get a little look behind the curtain of what you see in the, you know, in the music press back then of you know, just how these young lads were just, you know, this raucous rock and roll band and just kind of sort of seeing that the other side of that, you know, how Kyle had to learn to sort of process that and you know, and self-medicate, you know, to, from what sounds like, you know, ridiculously dangerous levels. And yeah, to sort of turn that round and lovely to sort of, you know, have him sitting at home, you know, lovely family, you know, that's growing in a couple of weeks as well, and to be running marathons and making some of the best music of his career. And yeah, much love to him for that and for giving up his time today to chat on here. Thanks to you lot for giving up your time to listen. I can't thank you enough. I love having these chats with people. You know, talking about music's my absolute joy, and to get to do it with so many people whose work I'm a big fan of makes it an absolute joy. I'm back next time. In the meantime, if you want to go and follow us on the socials, we're on all the usual platforms. And if you want to support the podcast on the Patreon and get access to another couple of hundred of episodes out the back catalogue there and all the videos and radio shows, then you can do that at patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack, or just go to the website. The website's got links to everything you ever need regarding this podcast, which is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. Have a lovely week. See you soon. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whippin.